Okay, it is the 19th of March, and we have exam number 2 coming up on Thursday, chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7. So banking, credit, consumerism, and then housing, which we're going to finish today. We're going to do the calculations again, and we'll discuss the option arm, which destroyed us. So chapter 4, make sure you can do the check reconciliation. We should have time at the end of class to go over the practice problem, if you want to go over it. Chapter 5, make sure you can do simple interest, principal, times rate, times time, no tricky ones, times rate, times time. And then no calculations for chapter 6, but chapter 7, we're going to do the mortgage calcs. We did them last Thursday, we'll do them again today. So bring one page of handwritten notes, front and back, and a calculator, and a Scantron, and any questions. And by chapter six is due. So you guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, turn in your assignments. What are you waiting for? Turn in your assignments, even if they're late. There's a penalty that grows over time, but it's well worth your time. Oh, anybody want to borrow The Millionaire Next Door? I have a couple of copies. I bought a bunch of copies and got most of them back when I went to the prison because they don't have a library. And I got most of all of them back, so I don't get them back from students here. I lend them out to students here, and they don't give them back to me. But students in the library, at the.
Did you buy them from thrift stores?
Yeah, I went around to thrift stores and found them there and bought them for 25 cents, a dollar, or whatever. So I didn't care. Well, it was my deal, big deal. And my son helped me buy a bunch online for average price of about $3 or something.
There's a hot called thrift books, and you can buy, like, I bought those people, like,
$5. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I go around and I buy them and then lend them out. And I get most of them back. Not always. Okay, so we're going to finish up housing. Oh, you have some extra three-ring binders if you want one. You want to borrow it? Oh, no, it's going away. Okay, who's got a good joke, though? So, okay, so you've had the bar jokes, right? Are you sick of the bar jokes? No? No? Okay, so then we'll transition out of the bar jokes, right? This will be the last bar joke. Will transition to the battle of the sexes jokes. So this guy walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before?
No.
And he's really sad. I tell you this? He's sad. So the bartender said, "Hey, Bonnie, what's wrong? Why are you so sad?" He said, "Oh, man. My wife and I had a terrible knockdown, drag-out fight, and she told me she wasn't going to speak to me for a whole month." And the bartender said, "That's so sad." The guy said, "Yeah, the month is up tonight." Yeah, he hasn't been married a long time. Okay. So the guy down the bar, though, he says, "You know, I haven't spoken to my wife. It's been about 5-6 months. And they said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Nothing. She just doesn't like it if I interrupt her." Don't worry. We'll insult the guys. we insult everybody. I know, a lot of younger folks are like, "Aren't you married?" "Aren't you? Are you happily married?" I say, "Oh, yes. My wife told me to tell you that we're happily married." So remember that. Okay. We had gone through housing, and we had done all the boring stuff, right? And we're going to go through it again. We're going to do some of the exciting stuff now, because now we're ready to talk about mortgages, right? We ended with private mortgage insurance. And these are all the details that you really should know, you should go through, and a good real estate agent or a mortgage broker should describe them to you. But now we're finally going to get to the pinnacle, that's how we say, of what it's like to own a house, and that's your mortgage. The dragon that you have to feed every month or it will devour you. And in San Diego, some people are paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month for a mortgage, and that's not typical. So for many decades, there was basically one type of loan called a conventional mortgage. Now it's called a conventional mortgage. And you might have heard of savings and loans. Well, these were the entities that were charged, you know, basically sponsored by the government to provide the funding for these conventional fixed rate mortgages, where you knew how much you were going to pay, you had a fixed payment, and it was fully amortized. So you might hear people say a fixed mortgage or a fixed rate mortgage. You won't hear them say a fixed payment mortgage. And you may hear the term fully amortized. What the hell does amortized mean? It just means spread out. Spread out over typically 30 years. Right? And they wanted, although first-time home buyers there were, and there still are, deals, but they want you to put 20% down. Well, if you have a $400,000 house, that's 80 grand. 20%. How many people have $80,000 lying around the house? No, right? That's why you hear people say, "Oh, I got in with 3%. I was able to just save up, you know, $15,000-$20,000, and they got me into a loan." But as housing prices started to levitate back in the late 1970s, 1980s, here in California, New York, and a few other places back east, somewhat in parts of Chicago, but not all of Chicago, you still find very good deals there. The industry started to get more flexible and creative. And we had our first meltdown in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and all the savings and loans disappeared because they had put money into these horrible loans, which they knew were going to, or maybe they, some of them can convince themselves that it wasn't going to happen, but it did happen. Have you heard of the adjustable rate mortgage? The ARM. More and more, the industry wanted to participate. They wanted you to participate in the risk of having a loan. Whereas if you have the conventional rate and it's at 6% or 5%, it will always be at that rate. But when interest rates spiked at 16, 17% in the early 1980s, many people said, "Oh, I don't know about this. I'm going to buy an adjustable rate mortgage." It has a cap. Let's say it starts at 4%. It has a cap, usually about 5%. It'll never go above 9%. That's called the cap, 5% cap. But every 6 months, every year, the interest varies according to market rates. It probably would never go below 3% or maybe even 2.5%. They have a floor. So they have a cap, you can think of it as a ceiling, and they have a floor. So the interest rate is tied to the prime rate, or you might have heard of LIBOR, London Interbank Overnight Rate. It's tied to some industry rate. And these things became very popular. Why? Because in the 1980s, interest rates started to fall and fall and fall. So if you bought a conventional rate mortgage at 12%, you saw your buddies who bought adjustable rates starting to see their mortgage go down and down and down as interest rates fell. So you thought, me some too. So you refinanced, and these things became very, very popular. And then the industry got really, really creative, and they created the option ARM. What the hell is that? The optional adjustable rate mortgage, which sometimes came with negative amortization, which doesn't mean anything to most people. You might even hear the industry folks call it NEGAM. Isn't that cute? Well, what is amortization? Spreading the price out, right? Spreading the loan out. Negative amortization is the exact opposite. Instead of the value of your loan going down, the balance going down, the balance starts going up. Are you with me? Understand? And this is what was being offered, especially in the 2000s when housing just got insane. We're going to give you a $500,000 loan, and you're only going to pay $1,600 per month. The interest rate is, 5%. If you go and look at the mortgage table, which we did the calculation on Thursday, we'll do it again today, you say, wait a minute, that's too good to be true. Well, what's going on? What's going on to that $500,000 loan? Let's put it over here. You are not paying enough to even cover the interest. Some of you might hear of some loans are interest only. You only have to pay the interest. In this case, instead of the loan going down, which is what happens to loans over time when you pay interest and principal, your loan is going up. Why do you want to do that? Well, you saw your neighbor's house, $300,000 2 years ago. Now it's $500,000. Another guy bought a $300,000 house in 2000. Now it's worth $895,000. Some of you weren't, maybe you weren't cognizant, but you were alive when this happened. This was just, you know, 15, 20 years, not 20 years. Started in 2001, 2, and then accelerated in 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it was off to the races. Me some too. I'm going to buy that $500,000 house that was $300,000 3 years ago because in 3 years it'll be worth $800,000, right? Sure. What happens in the second year? This is year number one. What happens to the price in year number two? It goes up to, let's say, $2,000 or $1,900. What happens in year number three? $2,600. And then year number four, it resets, whatever the hell that means, and becomes fully amortized. Now you've got to pay what you were supposed to pay at the beginning. And so now you're... mortgage is $3,200 per month. And so you say to the mortgage broker, you say, "Oh, Ms. Broker, Mr. Broker, you know, I can afford $1,600 a month. I certainly can afford $2,000. Well, I can't afford $2,600. I know I can't afford $3,200. And what does your loan broker say? "No problem. What are you worried about? That $500,000 house is going to be worth $800,000. Sell it." Or, "No problem, we'll just sell you another optional arm and lower the price back down to $1,700. What could go wrong? This is what these jerks were, I mean, these brokers were saying. And I was sitting there in the presentation, I'm going, "Oh my God, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad." This guy was saying, "We don't tell people what's the best loan is. We don't tell people we'll look for the best loan. We tell them this is the best loan." And this guy was boasting. He had a Lamborghini and a Porsche and a Hummer. And his next purchase was going to be a Gold Wing or Gold Star or whatever. What's the jet? $5 million jet? What is it? Gold something or other. He was going to buy a jet next. That was his next purchase. And I'm thinking, it's going to end badly. It's going to end really badly. And then I was in the next seminar where these were more people like me, brokers and the like, stockbrokers and the like. And they were talking about investments in mutual funds that's invested in real estate and the like. And the one guy, let's talk about the bubble of San Diego. And the guy goes, "What bubble?" And I'm sitting right in the front, which I normally do because my eyes aren't that great. I said, "You're out of your mind. Come on, you got to be crazy. These prices are insane. There's no way they're going to stay that way." And they looked at me like, I said, didn't you just watch what happened in 1998, 1999 to CMGI and DrCoop.com and Excite.com and all these companies? Dog Pile, they're all gone, right? You never heard of those. eToys, Pets.com, they're all gone. And the same thing is going to happen to real estate. Now, I was not pessimistic enough. My buddy, who's much more aggressive investor than I am, said, "Real estate's going to go down 50%. I said, "No, Jim, you got to go back to the Great Depression to see real estate go down. I think it's going to be 20, 25%. He goes, "No, I'm working with guys who are making $30,000, $40,000 a year. They're giving them $500,000 loans. I said, "How do they do that?" I said, "It's very easy. They lie." They're called liar loans. That's what they were called. Or no docs. And this mortgage broker says, "Now, how much are you making? $100,000? No, $35,000. How much are you making? $100,000? Oh, yes, I'm making $100,000. Are you with me?" And so they knew, the industry knew these people weren't going to be able to make these loans. And yet they were doing it. Over and over and over again, they were taking other people's money, because that's what bankers do. They don't take their own money. They take other people's money. When you put money in the bank, that's your money, but they take your money and they lend it out. And they're not supposed to lend it out to people who can't afford it. because that's not what banks are supposed to do. And when you grow up, you want to be a bank. And if you're a bank, you have a license to print money, but you also have a responsibility to the society, because a modern society needs banks. We can't have a modern financial system without banks. And yet, that's exactly what they were doing. And so what happened 2-3 years later? We're going to see in a bit. What happened? And I take Mr. Bernanke at his word. I held my nose, and I wrote the check. Because the banks were losing hundreds of billions of dollars because the prices of these houses did not continue to skyrocket. They went down. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Yes, sir.
Do you think that's
going to
happen
soon? Do I think it's going to happen soon? I don't know. I don't really know. It could, but I do know it's going to happen again. Because I was sitting, this was in 2008, right before the erection, like September, October, and this is when the market was in free fall. And I'm sitting in another, this is a different seminar, and these people, I trust these people with my money. These are the people I trust with my money and my client's money. And one of the guys who'd started in 1962, he's since retired, was up there, and another guy was up there. He was an energy expert, but this guy was a generalist. And I asked the question, sir, because he's saying, look, this is what the government's doing to reflate the economy. We believe this is going to happen, this is going to happen. But, you know, and they were kind of right. They said he said one of the best things, that it's going to get better in the United States first. But they don't know when, right? It took 5 years. But I asked, your boy, said, Mr. Gonton, is the government going to stop these loans? These liar loans, no doc, option arm, is the government going to stop? And according to our political analysts, and they have economic and political and as well as financial analysts, that yes, we believe the government will outlaw these loans. They was wrong. They was wrong. You might have heard of Dodd-Frank, and it's not doing it. What they did is they created this. It's a the banks created a liquidation plan, basically a suicide plan. That if this happens again, they have an orderly way to dissolve themselves. It ain't gonna happen. Well, screw up. Foul up, whatever the name is. And J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Bank of Armenia, they're not going anywhere. They're going to be around forever. And they're going to do it again. It's going to happen again. And you understand all this, don't you? Don't you understand all this? Do you think the average person understands what the hell happened? No, not at all. Let's take a look at an example. We're going to take a look at another. Well, maybe we'll now. What do I do? I don't know. What do I do? Oh! Did I show you why you want to be a bank? Did I show you that? I don't know if I showed it to you. Here, this guy. This guy's a riot. Here it is. David McWilliams, Punk Economics. I don't know if I showed this to you. I usually show it in chapter 4. Why you want to be a bank? Is she cute? I hope so. Let me make it a little bit louder. My apologies. Oh, come on. What happened to the darn things? Oh, darn it. Let me see if I can. It's up as high as it can go. Can you hear that?
Are you running Windows 7?
I don't know what the hell it is. Is it 7? I don't know what it is. Control panel. No, I just put it on the lowest one.
Hardware and sound.
For sound, just system volume. Okay, thank you, Mauricio. Yeah, no, I run the old shit. Old stuff. Sorry. Can you hear that?
Upon the Great Irish Railway
One speculation using other people's money becomes the fastest way to get rich. The bank's chief executive becomes the biggest threat.
Go, Christina.
Because if CEO's pay is linked to the share price, then we are almost guaranteed that wholesale looting as the CEOs take these reckless gambles to drive up the share price to pay themselves. I mean, why wouldn't they push it to the limits? Because it's entirely in their interest to do so. Lesson three. Now let's think about J.P. Morgan, a man who's seen his fair share of these crises come and go. He said something brilliant. He said, nothing so undermines your financial judgment at the sight of your neighbor getting rich. Now this is exactly what happens in a boom. Everybody sees the guy down the road or the bank across the road doing well, getting rich, and we try to copy them. And this is how a mania takes hold. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying bankers are bad people, they're just humans. And humans are all totally irrational. And when things are going well, we all tend to fall for her. Chief executives of banks are new. Lesson four, the forest fire. The best way to think of a banking crisis which is getting out of control is to consider a forest fire. The bankers are the pyromaniacs who have actually started the fire. The central bankers and the regulators, they're like the firemen, but unfortunately they were looking the other way. And the rest of the forest that hasn't burned yet is the general economy, which is threatened with incineration. Finally, the politicians are the last line of defence, and they are the ones who've got to put the fire out at all costs, with all means. Lesson five. The kidnapper wears Prada. Once we are in the situation that we found ourselves in 2008, it becomes like a hostage drama. The bankers are the kidnappers, the economy is the hostage, and the bankers threaten the politicians that if they don't get bailed out with as much money as they need, then they will shoot the hostage, the economy, and the entire thing will implode. So then the issue is really over how much ransom is paid over. The ransom is always other people's money, usually taxpayers. So the banker picks up the phone to the politician and says,
if you don't give us what we want, we will kill the economy. And you don't want that to happen, do you? So come on now, pay up and nobody's going to get hurt.
So this is really the too big to fail mantra in action. And this is how the public gets put on the hook for debts that the public had nothing to do with in the first place. So the question now is, could this all happen again? I mean, surely you think to yourself, after a crisis of this magnitude, there must be all classes of systems put in place to prevent a repeat of this type of cycle. But don't be so sure. For example, the mantra now is that we don't need aggressive financial regulation. What we simply need is an increase in capital requirements. But this is not actually true, because bank capital is only an accounting residuum. It's assets minus liabilities equals capital. There is no banking leprechaun with a pot of gold labeled capital at the end of the financial rainbow. So if the lads on the inside want to inflate assets and understate liabilities, they can actually create bank capital. So we're back to square one. And this is why we need more, not less, regulation. Because when a bank collapses, so too does the balance sheet of a country. And this leads to a liquidity trap where punters have too much debt and they don't want to borrow. And the banks have still too much bad debt and they don't want to lend. And the economy gets stuck. and it shrinks and prices start to fall. Now, forcing austerity, which has been the reaction thus far on such a country, which is already suffering from deleveraging and deflation, is a bit like putting an anorexic on the diet and expecting that person to get fat. If you doubt us, look at Europe right now. The banks are still weak, deficits enormous, unemployment in double digits, and prices are falling. And the Italian central bank boss, Draghi, is doing his best to turn the euro into the lira behind the backs of the Germans. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is hardly a solution.
They've changed it, though. That's a little old, but they've changed it. Europe's getting their act together. But it's going to happen again, dear students. It's going to happen again. My apologies. I didn't design the system. But it's going to happen again. So you, as a citizen, have to do something about it. And how do we, as individual citizens, do something about it? Contact our elected representatives and tell them we want more regulation. And guess how far that's going to get you? Forget it. As long as there are Republicans in the Congress and a few Democrats, it ain't going to change. My apologies. But hey, democracy might be the worst possible political system ever devised, except for all the others. So this is what we get. Now, some of you are eligible for VA loans. Those of you who are in the military, very cool. How much do they want down for these guys? I'm pointing at it. How much do they want down for these guys? How much do they want down for a VA loan? 0%. What? Yeah, it's one of the perks. You know, when people say, when I hear, especially we had them over there at the, they're so stupid, but they're Republican, young Republicans in love, and they're saying how bad socialism is. And I said, yes, do you know how the most socialist entity inside the federal government is? And they go, what? I said, the Department of Defense. You get a housing allowance, you get 0% down loans, you get money for kids, you know, you get your free health care, and they go, ooh. And one guy said, yeah, that's right, that's socialism. I said, yeah, okay. I'm not saying it's good or bad, I'm just saying that's what happened, so figure that one out. How do you figure that one out? Now, if you are qualified, you can get what's called an FHA loan, 3% down. 3% down, first-time home buyers again. You're going to pay more than somebody who puts 10, 20% down, but at least you can get into a home. And then there are some other options that we take a look at, graduated payments. Those are in option arms and in other loans, but mostly the option arm. Interest-only loans, those are typical second loans. You just pay interest for a certain amount of time. And then balloon payments, huh? Say you're in the military and you know you're going to be leaving in 3 to 5 years or going to be moving somewhere else, but you want to buy a house here. You can go to your mortgage broker and say, you know what, I'll do a 30 due in 5 or 30 due in 7. That's what you'll hear them say, 30 due in 7, 30, 37. It's basically a 30-year loan, but then after 5 years, you've got to give it up. You've got to either sell the house or refinance because they're going to give you a lower rate. Why? Because they know they're going to get their money in 5 or 7 years. So you see, there's a trade-off involved. If you plan on staying in the house, would you want one of these things? No, because it's a little risky because you have to refinance before it's over or sell the place. So they're a little risky, but they're great for people who know they're not going to be in that house for a while. We talked about a second mortgage, the home equity line of credit. No, this is wrong. I got to change that. It's not normally tax deductible anymore, thanks to the Republicans. And reverse mortgages. Did we discuss reverse mortgages a little bit? This is for the only for the elderly. We'll take a look at some examples when we get to estate planning at the end of the semester. And then shared appreciation. Let's do this later. Maybe today if we have enough time, we'll discuss it. But this is one of the situations where they couple the reverse mortgage with shared appreciation, and they can really screw people, elderly. They love to prey on the elderly. And we'll take a look at that maybe today, maybe later on. But I want to get through this and get to the more about the adjustable rate mortgage. And then as interest rates lower, you want to refinance. Some of you have high credit card debt. You can go to your credit card company and say, hey, there's another company that's offering me 14%. You're charging me 20%. Will you lower it? And they might. And if they don't, go to the other company. The same idea. You're paying 6% now for a loan. You can get a 4.5% loan. It used to be almost impossible to compare apples to apples when shopping for a loan. A lower interest rate was usually a come-on in exchange for being soaked with garbage fees. And the applicants often were not made of those extra fees until the day of the closing. So you are ready to close the house. You know, you've been working all this time and all the craziness and it's so damn scary and it's called buyer's remorse because it's real and you're frightened and you're going to be eating beans and rice for the rest of your life. But it doesn't usually work out that way. And then the day they show you the accounting and there's $15,000 loan distribution fee. Not the loan origination fee. That's the point that goes to the broker. That's the commission. But the loan distribution fee. And you go, well, what's this $15,000 loan distribution? Oh, that's the $15,000 loan distribution fee. Well, you've charged me $15,000 to write a check? Oh, that's the loan distribution. So they used to do this. And some people will still try to do it. But if they do it now, they have to give you a good faith estimate. They have to show it to you weeks before the closing, and then you can say, what the hell is this fee right here? And they'll go, oh, and they'll take it off. And if that's the case, you should find another loan broker. But get a good referral, and hopefully they won't do that to you. Now, should I make a large down payment? Should I pay off my mortgage early? The two are really the same question. The question is, how much of my house should I own? And how much should the bankers own? The real estate agent is going to tell you, oh, don't bother. Don't bother because you're going to buy a new house every 5 or 6 years, right? So I can make a new commission. A financial representative, oh, no, invest the rest into a mutual fund so I can make another commission. I say, if you intend on staying in your house, sure, make an extra $100 a month payment if you like, assuming you're paying your retirement too, and pay down that loan faster. Make love, not loans. Now you're going to hear other people. Somebody else is going to say, oh, Piano is an idiot. Don't listen to him. You want to die with the biggest mortgage available. You understand? First of all, they're not old yet. And secondly, the problem with that is, do you know when you're going to die? If you knew when you were going to die, before you die, you would run up credit card bills, your home loan, run everything up, and then make sure that last check bounces to SDG&E or whatever. But that's the problem. You just don't know when you're going to die. So my belief is make love, not loans. Bring down your mortgage. By the time you're ready to retire, you don't want to have that huge house payment. Okay, should you refinance? I'm sorry if I'm going too fast. Am I going too fast, folks? Just feel like this if I'm going too fast. Should you refinance? What? When interest rates, I know, I get a little excited. When interest, especially because this morning we had the best, we did the dividend discount models, which are so exciting. I get so excited. When interest rates trend lower, many homeowners consider refinancing their mortgage. We'll take a look at mortgages. And we did. We go look at them again. Payments usually go down as a result, but you incur all those closing costs that we saw on Tuesday. We can look at them again on Thursday. If you can get your rate down by about 2%, then it makes sense. But we saw that there are some no-cost or low-cost loans. So even if you're going to be paying more than the guy next door because he got the 4.5%, you got the 4.875%, if you're paying 6% now and you can get a 4.875% for $0, that's a no-brainer. Do it. You'll lower your payments and you will pay fewer dollars in interest. Okay, now that was now let's do the buying process. Wait a minute, I got some more. Come more. Okay, let's go some more. Why are they called closing costs? Because you close your eyes and sign. No, there's the title insurance. What the hell is that? Next slide. What's the escrow? Who are the escrow folks? They're the bean counters. They're the ones who make sure everybody gets paid and that the title gets transferred and all. They do all they make sure the money comes in and the title goes out. And both of these are great jobs, folks. There's the financial services industry. We have a financial services certificate that you can get here. A 2-year degree. We guarantee you won't have $80,000 worth of student loan debt. And you can get a job at a title insurance company. Okay, easy job. Escrow fee, a little trickier. Take as much accounting as you can. Attorneys, no, that's a different world. But appraiser, Appraisers, if you want a job where you will never have any time off, and you'll be working your buns off, and you'll make a lot of money, become an appraiser. It takes several years because you have to be apprentice for several years, but it's a good job. The survey, the recording fees, the transfer taxes, the credit report, the term my report. Here's the loan origination fee. That's the commission that goes to the broker. Taxes, insurance, prepaid interest, real estate commissions to the real estate broker. Oh, my God. Insist on a walkthrough. The day before, or sometimes the day of, you say, I want to see what happened, especially if you don't trust the people, which is often the case, don't trust them. Because you might have put down in the sales agreement that, you know what, I want you to keep, we want to keep the chandelier. This chandelier, we don't want you to take that chandelier. And you said you would keep it, you would sell us the washer and a dryer too, right? So you're gonna, that's part of the sales agreement. It's written in the sales agreement that you won't take those. And then the day you get the keys, you walk in, the chandelier's gone, the washer and dryer's gone. We're sorry, the movers accidentally took them. And they're on their way to Bremerton, Washington. So the day before, and if they did take it, they should knock that price. And the accountants, the escrow folks will do that, assuming you and your broker, your agent, get them to agree. In some states, it is just de rigueur, means that's what happens. You bring an attorney to the transaction. California, you don't see that too much. You don't see, at least I haven't. I've never done it. Never had it done in front of me. Okay, so closing costs. Now, title insurance. People do not understand title insurance. Wouldn't you love to sell something for $400,000 that wasn't yours? Wouldn't you just love to do that? It's not legal, of course, right? And title insurance makes sure that doesn't happen. They make sure you are who you say you are, and if you're the seller, you own the property. If you're the buyer, they want to make sure you are who you say you are. It's all public records. And so if something untoward happens, and all of a sudden you no longer own the house, the title insurance company will make you whole. And also, by the way, your mortgage company won't lend unless there's title insurance. And this is cool. This is cool because now in Mexico, you can get title insurance. There were stories 30, 40 years ago of gringos buying a property and then having the rug pulled out from under them. And they didn't have title insurance, but now they do. They do have title insurance, and these are companies that are based in the United States that are doing it. So if you want to buy in Mexico, now's a good time. What's the peso? What's the peso? 18 and a half, right? 10 years ago it was 10. So now's a good time to buy property in Mexico. All right, so now, before we go to selling our house, let's take a look at, we talked about, did we mention Zillow? I think we did. Did we mention Zillow? There are companies now that will allow you to, they call it the Zestimate. They call it their Zestimate. Zestimate or whatever it is. There's Zillow, Trulia, but now they're the same company. Reddit, and then there's another one, I can't remember. No, Redfin, not Reddit. Redfin, and then there's another one. Redfin. And there's another one that you don't hear too much about. I got the three on the website. What? Trulia? Yeah, Trulia and Zillow. They're the same company. They merged. But they have two different algorithms, and Zillow's is better. But it's still not that great. So now, you can look up your house. You can look up what your house is worth. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool, but it's not very good. I've looked at the net estimates, and not very great. But some people are just obsessed with their housing prices. They look at them every day. That's a recipe to make yourself sick, folks. A recipe to make yourself sick. So I've got some numbers. I got some. You want to take a look at yours? Anybody want to take a look at their property? Yes. What is it? 843. Cornell. Two L's. Oh, in Chula. There it is. It saw it. Cornell and Avenue. In Chula. And so what they think it's worth? They think it's worth $574,000. That's their Zestimate or Zestimate. And it's a, I don't know, where is that anyway? It's hard to see. Their maps are not very good. Where is that? Let's see if they go. Oh, it's really close. It's right up the street here. It's right up the street, yeah. Yeah, I told you, remember I told you Cockatoo Grove? You're sitting on it. This is where Southwestern was, Cockatoo Grove, before it was, before, what? There it is. And so, let's take a look at what happened. This is what they say it's worth. They say that it's probably between 546 and 600 and 3,000. The real estate agents hate this company. They literally hate this company. And they believe next year it's going to be worth about 589. Doesn't mean they're right. They have a graph. Where'd the graph go? Where's the graph? But the graph isn't useful to us anymore. I lose the graph. But here, there's the graph. I wish it went back 20 years. Because then you would really see, you'd see the run-up and then the implosion. But now, since 8-10 years ago, it's been going, prices have been going up. But this is cool. Let's see if we can find out about this thing. Now, look, there's not much. Did you guys buy it in 2003? Yeah, that's you? Okay. So in 2000, it sold for $240. 3 years later, $440. Doubled in 3 years, right? Well, three and a half years. Yeah, amazing, isn't it? And now they believe it's worth about $570. But we don't see the whoa and down. But what I do have, I have a couple here. Close. That don't go knocking on these people's door, okay? Because during the Great Recession, I was looking at this thing, and I wasn't just looking, not just using Zillow. I was using what prices were for places, and I was looking around, and prices had just plummeted. And this is about 2009, so I went to my wife, Anita, because that's her name, Anita. Hey, Anita, let's go look at some real estate. Because when we first met, she was scared of stocks. She goes, why are we investing in stocks? It's just scary. Why don't we invest in real estate? Because it's too damn expensive. I don't want to buy something. It's too expensive. If I'm going to buy real estate, I want to make money over real estate. And the way to make money in real estate for decades, since the 1980s in San Diego, was to buy high, sell higher. Buy high, sell higher. And you didn't make money off the rent. I want to make money off the rent. That's the cash flow that's in my pocket. So I'm looking around. I'm thinking, wow. Look at these prices. We can make money. And then she goes, finally got me interested. Finally got me feeling comfortable about stocks. Now you want me to buy real estate. And we did. But anyway, here's $477. That's what they think it's worth. Now watch what happened. Let's see what happened. This sold originally for $2,000. That's when this. Well, some of these are not, you wonder if they're not really sales or not. Here it sold for $195, that was probably when it was built, 2000. And then 4 years later, $449. And then here, you don't know that these are real sales. They might be foreclosures because they're all within the same. Well, no, this one, definitely. Two years later, the price had not done anything. You want some of this data you don't really trust. But this one, yeah. This one right here is foreclosure. They don't say foreclosure, but you just know it's a foreclosure because 2 months later they listed it for sale for $248. You see that? The bank foreclosed, and they had to put a price on it. Okay, $411,000, and yet they were only able to sell it for $250. And then 6 years later, $385. They removed the listing, and then finally sold it for $215, $385. So it sold at the height, $450 or so. That wasn't even the height of the bubble. Close, 2006 or so, at the height of the bubble. And what's it worth? $477. Yeah, that's why. Okay, here's this one's even worse. This one's my favorite to show people. People don't believe me, but this is what happened. This is what happened to people. They were destroyed financially. People would ask me, aren't you upset about about losing 40% stocks? I said, yeah, I'm not happy about it. But at the same time, I didn't lose everything. I didn't lose everything as the real estate agents lost. Real estate investors. I'm sorry. I'm losing. I got to cut down. I need some water. Who has a good joke? Anybody got a good joke? All right, I'm female. Okay. So the woman runs in the house, slams the door, yells out, honey, pack your bags, I won the lottery. And the husband's so excited, he says, ooh, that's so exciting. What should I pack? Beach, mountain, stone, carriage, just get the hell out of here now. Yeah. She won the lottery. Okay. Anyway, so this house, they think, where is this? You know where Palomar's trolley stop is? Yeah, it's right there. It's right there. Okay, and then go, don't, please don't knock on their door, okay? Say, Mr. Dean, you know, Mr. Brian, I use your head. Please don't do that. Okay, because I don't know how I live there. But I looked at dozens and dozens, but this one was just a killer. So they think it's worth about $465. Let's see what happened. Again, I wish the graph would show the whole 20 years, but it doesn't. So this was built in like 1960 or so, it's an old house. But the data only goes back to 1999. We were sold for $170, $169. 8 years later, $570. So $169 to $570 over 8 years. Now let's just make, I keep meaning to go down to the county admin building and look at what they actually put down. But let's say they put down $70,000, just to make the numbers easy. They put $70,000 down. What's the loan for? $500,000. So some bank lent them $500,000. Their money is $70,000 in this. Now, why would they do something like this? Well, they believe in a few years, $1.2 million, right? Me some too. And obviously, that didn't happen. It's like musical chairs. As long as the music, like it's up there, as long as everybody, assets are going up, everybody happy, need some too, quick, run. They're giving away free money, quick, do it. And then the price started falling and falling and falling and falling. And this person, we don't know that, but let's assume they had an option arm. They started making payments of $1,600 a month, and then $2,400 a month, and then $2,900 a month. And after 3 years, they gave up, right? They say it sold for, that's probably a foreclosure. That's probably what it really sold for. That's the value. So in 2010, so this is February 2007, in February of 2010, it sold for $225. Now this is a duplex. So this person might not even have lived there. And they were collecting rent, which didn't any go anywhere near, you know, what at the time, probably $1,000 or one bedrooms or whatever they are. They were selling for, you know, their rent was like $2,000, and now he's got to pay $2,600, $3,200. So this guy or gal, we don't know who it is, and again, this is subjective. It happened. I don't know if it happened in this situation. They just stopped paying the mortgage, but they kept collecting the rent. Is there anything illegal about that? Yeah. No. Nothing illegal about that. You want to break their kneecaps, pull their skin off, and dunk them in vinegar. But there's nothing illegal about that. Because what happened is eventually, it took a while, but the banks got around to finally foreclosing. And they foreclosed. They took over the property. And they sent a letter to the people who lived there with a check for $3,000. That said, we now own the property. We'd like you to leave as soon as possible. Here's a check for $3,000 to get out in 30 days. And if you promise to get out in 30 days, you can cash that check and it's yours. Because we want you out of there. Because now we have to sell it. And what did they sell it for? $225. So what happened to this gal or guy's down payment? It's gone. They lost everything. And how much did the bank lose? And there were tens of thousands of these foreclosures that happened in the Great Recession. Now do you understand that video? Did anybody go to jail for this? No. They all wound up with great pensions and great parachutes, golden parachutes. Yes, you see why you want to be a bank? You can lose $275,000 and nobody cares because the taxpayers will pay for it all. You see what we're up against? I'm not happy about this. In fact, I'm downright upset about it, but there's not a whole lot we can do other than to become informed and be active participants in the society and call your erected representative. And it sounds like an advertisement. And yet, that's it. That's democracy. Yeah.
But that's what pretty much was happening when everybody was leaving the houses around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you could shake a stick. I mean, this is just one of many, folks. One of many of houses that were in foreclosure. That went, but think about the person who bought it $225. They did okay, but it's still not worth what it was at the peak. Because whoever bought it in February 2007, they hit just the time when the market started falling. They hit it. Yes. Again, I was looking at dozens of addresses, but I picked this one because whoever this person was, they picked the peak of the market. They picked just right because it had stopped. It had stopped going up, so they must have thought, "Wow, this is a great time," you know. And it hadn't gone up much in the last few months, and then right, you don't see the graph. I wish you would, because it doesn't go back 20 years, but you could. And you see, they just the peak of the market, and then, wow, it was like this roller coaster. Yeah?
Wasn't it like evident, though, like when they bought the house, it didn't drop?
You say that in hindsight. And yes, for some of us, as I said, I'm sitting there going, what do you mean, what bubble? This is a bubble. I don't know when it's going to burst, but it's going to burst. And I didn't think it was going to go down. What is it, 60% down? Check it out. This is 60% down. I didn't think it was going to be this bad. My buddy thought it was going to be this bad, but he bet too soon. He bet against the housing market in 2005 and 6 and got hammered. And now how do you bet against? Take business 123. We do it at the end of the semester. It's called shorting. You don't want to do it because it's like getting in front of, you know this freight train is going to fall. You know it's going to happen. It's going to go off the track. It's going to destroy everything. And if you can get in front of it at the right time and it goes off the track, you're going to make a ton of money. But if it doesn't get off the track, you get flattened. You're screwed. And let's take a look, speaking of which, let's take a look at the freight train.
I also noticed that the two different locations
don't
really have a different of a starting price. They were both in the fours.
Yeah, well, we have one. Hang on, don't worry. We got one by East Lake Greens.
Right.
Okay. Here it is. This is a graph that, I don't know if it makes any sense to you, but let's explain it. These are those option arms. Remember the rate resets? When the recession hit in 2007 and 8, the train jumped the tracks. But they still kept on going because these things either reset in 3 years or 5 years or 7 years. So you see, here are the resets. Here is the worst time right here. And then it pauses. And then here are the five-year rate resets. So these are the monthly mortgage rate resets. And then what happens? They're gone. So they all of a sudden the regulators said, no more. Yeah, you can do a few. And if you meet a mortgage broker that's been in the business 30 years, and he says, yeah, you know, I've done about three of these things over the 30 years, that's an ethical person. Why? Because these things can actually be very useful for some people. Who would it be useful for? Who could make a payment of $1,600 and then $22,000 and then $2,600. Someone young who just got out of medical school, who just got out of engineering school or law school or a business, and they're starting at maybe $40,000, $50,000, but within a few years they're going to make $100,000 or more. If they're a doctor, they're going to make $180,000 or more, right? And so those people, yeah, that makes sense. But some janitor at Southwestern Community College or a professor at Southwestern Community College, is our salary going to go up that high over the next 3 to 5 years? Hell no. And yet, there were people, that's all they were selling, that they could buy a Lamborghini and a Porsche and a Dummer and buy a jet. Okay, yes, Alvaro.
Was that guy's name
that
bailed into the market?
Paulson. And Jim Paulson. Movie? The Big Short. Jim Paulson.
Yeah.
And he made $20 billion for his clients. And he... But then he made some stupid mistakes. Yeah, he bought some gold at the wrong time. No, he's. But you remember, he had to do it just at the right time.
Every time he was crazy, like.
Because I begged my buddy, don't do this. You could get. You're right. I agree with you. The housing market is in a bubble, but we just don't know when. You don't know when. You have to read a book called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. You have to read this book. I know you won't, because you guys don't like to read. But it was written in the 1840s. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the madness of crowds. It talks about the witch hunts, the witch trials. It talks about the crusades and the various financial picadillos of the 1700s and the 1600s, and it shows that we humans are not rational. As the guy said in the video, humans are not rational. We'd like to think we are, but we're not. And one of my students said it really well. He said it's easier to fool 300 million people than it is to fool one. You understand? You can fool one person, forget it. You can't fool me. But as long as everybody else is being fooled, okay. Because we're animals. We don't like to think of ourselves as animals. But 100,000 years ago, when you saw a whole bunch of people running that way, what did you do? You ran that way, right. And the people who said, look at all those people running that way, they're the ones that got eaten by the tiger. And so they didn't get to pass on their genes. So it worked for us 100,000 years ago, but now it doesn't work so well. Okay, title insurance. As we said, title insurance helps you make sure that it's your house and it's not going to be pulled out from underneath you. Oh, by the way, if the house was sold within the last couple of years or if it was refinanced in the last couple of years, you should ask for a discount and they should give it to you. Because title insurance companies, the prices are outrageous. They're either really expensive or really, there's no rhyme or reason. Don't assume your real estate agent is going to give you the best price. They're not supposed to get a kickback, but supposedly they do. And now, we've been talking about buying a house. What happens when you sell your house? Well, supposedly one of the best things you do when you sell your house is put a white picket fence up. I don't know, but that's what they said. Yeah, put a white picket fence up. Appraiser is going to cost you $350. A realtor will do it for free, but they want you to sign up with them. Would you sell it yourself? Well, I used to think I would. I'm never going to sell. Doesn't matter. I'm not being buried there. But I have sales experience. But now it's gotten so complicated. There's just so many things going on that you really do need a real estate agent and expect to pay about 6%. However, you can negotiate that. You talk to your real estate agent. Would you give me a break? Yeah, for you, 6%. And next week, we have a deal, 6%. Find out. Actually, if you're able to bring somebody, if you're the seller and you actually have a couple of people lined up for buyers, your real estate agent should charge you like 3 or 4%. And if you want to do it alone, find somebody, lawyer or a mortgage broker, who will do it for 1%. There's a company called iPayOne. Have you heard about them? You heard about them because they had your name on the sports arena for a while. But iPayOne, everybody goes, iPayOne what? 1%. They charge you 1%. But if that means you are the buyer. That means you don't have, the real estate agent doesn't have to go out and find buyers for your property and then share that commission with the seller's with the buyer's agent. But it's so cool now. The tax consequences are very, very cool. If you're single, you can sell your house for $250,000 more than you paid for it and not pay any capital gains taxes. Is that cool? Your property. Has to be your property. If you're married, double it. So you could buy a house for $200,000, sell for $700,000, and not pay any capital gains taxes. And you can do that every 2 years. So there are people who are doing that. There are people, not so much in San Diego because it's such a tough market, but in other parts of the country, find a fixer-upper. You're handy with drywall, plumbing, flooring, or whatever. Live in it for 2 years, fix it up. You usually have a day job, too. And then after 2 years, you can sell it. No capital gains taxes. Is that cool or what? Don't flip it in 3 months. That's a stupid show. I don't know if they still have this show. Do they still have those shows where you flip? It's such a scam. You better know exactly what you're doing. San Diego, forget it. If it's your home and you lose money, oh well, sorry, it's your home. It's a home first, an investment second. So, okay, we got through it now. So, you ready to buy a house? Hell no. Yes? Okay. Maybe in a few years, maybe San Diego, who knows? Depends on your job. Maybe you'll move someplace else. But let's do the mortgage calculations again. You want to do them again? Nod your heads yes? Okay. So, am I missing anything? Did you get it? You get an education? Yeah. I remember you, wonderprofessor.com will still be up as long as I'm alive and probably afterwards. And so you can always come back and check out. Okay. So let's go. Oh, we didn't show you the one. I'm sorry. Let's show you the. You got. Christina said, "Well, these were houses that aren't that expensive. What about an expensive house?" Okay, let's go take a look at. Again, please don't. 1132, because this person probably is high powered. Augusta Place. Now, where is this? By Eastlake Greens. You know, this is the golf course, right? You know where that is? Yes. I often wonder, if you buy a house on a golf course, you better have really strong windows, right? Because your house is going to get hammered with golf balls. But I guess you get free golf balls. Okay, they think it's worth $1 million, right? That's what they think it's worth. $1 million, right? Now, let's take a look at this house. This is this one. You know, Mia said, how did you find these houses? Let's keep looking around. The one right next to it?
No, the 719 Ada Street.
Oh.
With the red car out front. I know the person that was in the house.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Okay. So, what coincidence? Can you say coincidence? So, here was a house that was sold in 96, probably when it was built, right, 96. And then it was sold for $369. Well, who knows? Maybe they trashed it. Who knows? Whatever. Maybe foreclosure. Because then in 98, 99. What? See, some of this data you don't really trust. But this one I trust. Why? Because there's the agent's name. So in 2004, it sold for $1.25 million. That was before the bubble hit. I mean, before the peak. And then a few years later, they're in trouble. They're trying to sell it, and they can't do it. And finally, they say it was sold for $685. That's probably the foreclosure. That's probably the foreclosure where the bank took over. Melissa did for sale. Fell through, their pending sale fell through, listed for sale. Finally, this one you trust, because there's the name of the agent, $650, sold for 2010. Now they're trying to rent it, right? And then they finally sell it again for $651. So whoever made this price, whoever made this sale, whether it was a foreclosure, it probably wasn't a foreclosure because you don't see a subsequent sale afterwards, but they bought it for $651. And now we think, or at least Zillow thinks it's worth $1 million. But here, it hasn't even gotten back up to the peak price. So whoever bought this one, yeah, they got really screwed. Say so. Just start playing. Start playing. Just start looking at houses. Yeah, have a good time. Okay, I don't know if you think that's a good time. But let's, I think it's exciting. What can I say? I teach this stuff. What can I say? For me, it's exciting. Okay, so let's go to the worksheet. We already did these, so some of you are going to go, we already did these, but we could do another amount. You want to do a different amount than the one on the worksheet? Everybody got a worksheet? If you don't, come see me. What? Okay, hang on a minute. Okay, you didn't answer me. Do you want to do 350 or do you want to do another amount? A different amount? Okay, so how much? 500,000? You want to do 500 grand? No. Thomas, where is Thomas? Where did he go? He was here this morning. I had to leave, I guess. Okay. So let's do 500 grand. That's a lot. Okay. Yeah, sure. You gotta speak up. Yeah. Okay. Pass that over to her, please. Who else? Two more. Come get them. Okay, so I wish we had more. Come get them. So our loan amount is 500 grand. Whoops, what am I doing? Loan amount. Now, if we go to our mortgage broker and we have good credit, we've got a decent down payment. So if our mortgage is $500,000, how much is our house going to be? We got to put something down, right? $550,000, $600,000. So maybe put $50,000 down. So maybe we get 4.5%, and that's what you know. You can probably get now if you got good credit. Do you think that that's going to change between now and Thursday? Everyone should say no. Oh, good. And so we look at the term, and the banker shows us 30 years. So what do? We go to the mortgage amortization table. Over to 4.5%, down 30 years, and what's the multiplier? Everyone should say 5.067. Wait till I ask you, what's the multiplier? So we multiply the 500,000. What happens in the last three digits? What happens in the last three digits? Cross them out. If you don't, you're going to get a really big number, and then you can divide by 1,000. That will work the exact same way. So multiply 500 times 5.067. 2,533.50 is our monthly payment. And folks, is this typical of Southern California?
Yes.
Oh yeah. But that's only the interest and the principal. You still have to pay insurance, which is going to be $500-$600 a month. You have to pay utilities. If it's a big house, it's going to be over $100 just for heat, right? Air conditioning, if you want the air conditioning. You have to pay insurance. That's going to be about $70, $80, maybe $100 a month. Mm-hmm. So you see why people call it the dragon? To feed the dragon, $3,000 a month? Okay. So now, how many payments? Number of payments. Yeah, if it's a 30-year loan, it's a very simple calculation. You take 30 years times 12 months per year, or 360 payments. So what is the total amount of our loan? Take the 2,533.50 times 360 payments, and how much is the bank going to ask for us? How many? 15,100,000? How many? How much? 812,000? 912,000. Got bad hearing. And how much? $60. I told you want to be a bank when you grow up. That's why they're always so nice to you when you walk in the door. But wait a minute. We borrowed $500,000 of that. We borrowed, that wasn't our money. They lent it to us. So what is the total interest? Yeah, that's very easy. 412,060. 412,060. Cool? Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticism, suggestions, jokes about mortgage brokers? Okay, so now, maybe you're both, pretty darn powerful, and you're both pulling, 100 grand a year. That's a pretty good salary, right? The two of you, 100 grand a year, $200,000. Could you make bigger payments? Oh, yeah, sure you could. So you go to your mortgage broker and you say, look, how about a 15-year loan? And the first thing your mortgage broker is going to say is, sure, you qualify. Plus, we're going to reduce that rate from 4.5% down to 3.875, or maybe 4%. A 0.5% easily will bring it down. That's typical. It's a precept, a very strong concept of finance. The longer the money is out there, the more you're going to require, because there's more time for things to screw up. The fewer years the money is out there, you'll charge less interest. So we go across the 4% down to 15 years, and what's the...
7.
Oh, yeah, there it is. 7.397... What do we do with the last four zeros? Last three zeros. I'm a big help today. So, what? Oh, my goodness. How much is that?
$3,698.05.
Don't forget the 5 cents. The bank wants every penny. So, our monthly payment is going to be, almost $4,000 a month. But it's only 15 years. So 15 years times 12 payments per year. Everyone should say? Everyone should say 180. How many? 180. The number of payments is 180. So we multiply the 36,98.05 times 180, and so what's the total amount of the loan? Look at the difference, huh? How much fewer dollars in interest? We borrowed 500,000 of that, so 165,649. Look at the difference in interest. Pretty amazing, isn't it? It is, and most people don't really understand it. And then, you know, you can always make extra payments, additional principal payments they're called. So don't think you have to get the 15-year loan. But if you can swing it, cool. Okay. Yes, question? Thoughts? Ideas? Okay, so let's review again. On Thursday, we're going to have two parts. There's a Scantron part and then calculations, sort of say. Check reconciliation. Those of you who want to stick around, we'll do a check reconciliation. If you want to go, we'll do the practice problem, number two. Principal times rate times time, chapter five. The mortgage calcs that we just did. The interest rates will not change perceptibly in 2 days. bring in one page of handwritten notes. The formulas will be on the, and then this will be on the exam, so you don't have to memorize that or anything, bring that. Calculator, Scantron. Get plenty of rest, drink plenty of fluids, take acid, and come be awesome. Questions, thoughts, ideas? There may be a short essay, I don't know. But again, just write whatever, you know. Some people, it amazes me. They just go, I don't know what to write. I can't write. What the hell? You know, you got to try. I'm going to tell you a little story. I grew up in the 1970s, right? And I always brought a pipe. My brother made really good joints, right? And I'd say, John, how do you do this? Because you got to put up with your bad joints. So you got to put up with your bad writing. And that's why you're here. You're here to put up to create your bad writing. And don't worry about it. You'll be amazed at how much credit you get from yours truly. But you got to learn how to BS the professor, especially if you want to go to the university. Okay? So now those of you who want to leave, you're free to go. Those of you who want to stick around and do the check reconciliation from Chapter 4, stick around and we'll do that. Yeah. Yes, which one? Okay, let me write this down. Okay, 121. Okay, Mr. Marth Chen has Millionaire Next Door. It's a great book. Where do you read it? Now, numbers are a little out of... In fact, that's where Chapter 6 came from. Oh, that. Okay, what are you looking for? You need an extra one?
Reconciliation.
Yeah. You have an extra one. Yes. Okay, great. Okay. And Sarah has my... I know, I'm just writing it down because I forget. That's my last. That was the one my stepfather gave me. So don't lose that one. I've lost all the other ones. A wealthy barber. Has he read any of it yet? Your husband? Has he read it yet?
He's been reading it.
Yeah. He's been reading it. Oh. Okay, Mr. Sanders. Oh, no, sorry, Martos. Eric Martos. And Mr. Sanders, I think, came in the other. I don't remember. Okay. Yes, Eric. Okay, anybody else sneak in? Juan Mendoza. Did he come in? I don't remember. This is bad. I got to contact Laura. Call Laura. What the hell's going on? I think we lost Kiana. She's been gone for...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We lost Kiana, yeah. Okay. But Laura's only been gone three times, right? Three times. Okay, so let's take a look at... do you have a question, Tara?
Yeah, I didn't realize that I was absent for chapter 4.
Oh, you need the chapter 4?
Yes, please.
Okay, you have. Oh, that's right. You were absent for a whole week. We thought we'd lost you. Okay, chapter 4.
Well, it's because one of the days was canceled, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was sick one day. Yeah, here. Okay. Okay. Do you have chapter 4? Everybody have chapter 4? Okay. So let's do practice problem number 2. Practice problem number 2. Okay. What? Okay, here we go. We're going to do the check register first. How are we doing for time? Yeah, we got enough. You guys don't mind waiting afterwards. Okay, so let's fill out the register first. So what's our starting balance? Right, 8, 27, 93. 27.93. Okay, so what's the first transaction? Yes, the check number 2033 on the 7th of January to Clara. You know clarification? Okay, and then there's a payment column, debits, and then there's this little check mark here, and then there's a deposits column. And they throw in those words debits and credits, which drive people nuts. Okay, so is this a payment? This is a check, so this is a payment for? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Does it not work well if you just like remove the screen and use the board to write it? Does that not work well?
You want me to remove the screen?
Wouldn't that be easier? Cause
yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Sorry, sure. I just wanted to make sure you guys saw them. What?
They're not still living right there.
Sure?
Yeah.
Okay. This is something new for me. Okay, 165. And it's 827.93. You know, I've been teaching a long time and I've never why didn't I think of it? I'm out of water. Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah, and that is the dirty little secret about teaching. We learn more from you than you learn from us. I think so. I think so. Okay, so now, this is a debit. So what happens to the balance?
Minus.
So we have now? 662.93. 662.93. Got to talk loud. My hearing's not that great. Okay, now, some people will use 2 per transaction. Some people will use 1. It's up to you. I usually just use 1, but some people will put more notes here. It's up to you. Okay, so let's use 2 just for something different. What's the next transaction? 2034. What's the date? 12th of January. And I write it usually this way or sometimes that way, and you decide how you want to write it. And who is this?
Nicole and Dime.
Nickel and dime? I know, they get worse. What can I say? So how much is this for? 218.44. This is a debit, a payment. So what happens to our balance?
444.49
is what Mia says. Is she right? What? Yes, please. Yeah, that's what. Where's your calculator? Come on, Tara, get your... It's your smell phone. She's right here. Oh, Harris, I trust her. I trust her. Now, what do we do? What happens on the 18th? Right. I don't leave this blank. I put the little DEP there, but you decide what you want to do. And so this is an ATM deposit. And this goes in this column over here as a credit. As a credit. And how much was the deposit for? 189.50, and so that is an addition. And what some people will do, you cannot do this, but they'll put the amount right here. They'll put the 189.50, and then add. You know, you decide. I don't do that, but some people do that. That's why they use 2 different lines. So what happens to our balance now? 6:33.99. Cool? Okay, next transaction is for, I mean, what check is it? 2035, what day? 22nd, and who is this? Hope and a prayer. Hope and a prayer. For $41.19. $41.19. So now? $592.30? 80. Okay. Everybody with us? Okay, next check. 2036, 25th of January to, feel yourself, for $116.25, what happens to our balance? Me is way ahead of everybody else. 476 and 55? 476.55. Cool. Okay. And now, next one, 2037, on the 31st of January to, Otis is hard. Otis is hard. Okay, for 80, no it's not, 87.46, so we subtract 389.09. And then the last one for the 31st of January, the deposit at the ATM machine. And for 664.28. So what do we got? 1,053.37? Cool. Okay, so now, what happens? What happens is, this is going to work now. let's move it down. Just to show you. I think you guys already know. But maybe Tara doesn't. We go online. What happened is they used to send it to us, right, in the mail, but they don't do that anymore. We go online and we get a statement. But now we go online and we see the transactions as they happen, like how sophisticated the systems are. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to see, okay, did I do that right? Yeah, I did it. Perfect. Okay, so now what we're going to see is which transactions have cleared. So we're ready to do our reconciliation. Which transactions have cleared? Look at the statement. I'm not going to bring it down, bring it up, because you can't really visit it. You can't view it that easily. But which statements have cleared? I mean, which transactions have cleared? 2034. Put a little check mark there.
The 18th.
Check 2035. 2036. And that's it, right? You see that? 2033, she never cashed it. It's still outstanding. That's what it's called, a check outstanding. That's what they call it. Check outstanding. And the same thing is true for 2037. That's a check that is outstanding. All the other checks have cleared. And the deposit here has been what they don't use the same terminology. They say it's been confirmed. This deposit is in transit. That's the terminology that the banks use. They might say it's outstanding too, but the deposit is in transit. Now this you're going to see fewer and fewer times. Why? Because of the technology. Their systems are so sophisticated that even if you go to an ATM machine, they don't know that you put $664.28 in. They have to go and check. They have to confirm that deposit. But their system says pending or in transit or something like that. And you go, oh, okay, cool. So this is going to happen fewer and fewer times, which makes it easier for us. Because now we're ready to do the reconciliation. Everybody got anyone next to them? Got one? Okay. Okay. Okay, so now we're ready to do the reconciliation. And on the reconciliation sheet is the steps that we have to do. We have to identify, which we've already done. We've identified the cleared checks, and now we're going to identify the checks outstanding, or outstanding checks. And on the reconciliation sheet, that goes in the lower left-hand corner. Which checks are still outstanding? The ones without the check marks. Don't put the ones with the check marks, because that's when you get a sapapo, right? You'll get the wrong answer. So 2033 and 2037. And you can put the date, and you can put whatever you want there. You know, 7th of January and 31st of January. But most important is the number. How much is the first check for? That's okay. How much? $65 and? $165 and 0 cents, right? And the second one is for? $87.46. Now, we need the total. What is that? $252.46. And then the same thing for the deposits in transit, knowing full well that this is very rarely going to happen anymore because of technology. But it was typical, you know, years ago. You put in a deposit in the ATM machine over the weekend, they wouldn't get to it till Monday or Tuesday. So that's on the 31st of January for $664.28. So that's the total. $664.28. Cool. Now we have two sides. We have your side. This is your side on the left. Your reconciliation. And then this is the bank or credit union side. And we're going to do additions to your account. And deductions from your account. And the same thing is true on the bank side. We'll do additions. And we'll do deductions. We'll start with the ending checkbook balance. Don't use the beginning checkbook balance, because you'll get a sapapo plus the wrong number. And the ending bank statement balance. In other words, this is what the bank thinks you have.
Is that where we use the little worksheet? Or?
Yeah, now we're looking at the work. Now you should be looking at the worksheet, right?
Uh-huh.
So we put.
Okay, I was writing over there. Okay.
You put it right there. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
That's why I was going to put that on the screen, but it doesn't work now. Okay, so what's the ending checkbook balance? $1,053.37. What's the ending bank statement balance? Let's see if we can see. $534.27. You can't really see it. Sorry. There it is. $534.27. And that goes up here. Okay. Now, here's the. Well, let's do the deposits in transit. This is the easy part. Deposits in transit. And then there's others. And total. And then the checks outstanding. This side is actually easier. And then others. And then total. Okay, so what? This is addition, and then here's subtraction. What are the deposits in transit? 66428. What are the checks outstanding? What are the checks outstanding? 252.46. Now, will we ever see any of these others? Very, very unusual. It means something weird happened at the bank. You got to contact the bank right away, credit union right away, because. In other words, you might see, you know, $1,800,000. Oh, cool. It's my. No, it's not your money. Don't do it. So, 664.28, 252.46. So we take the ending bank statement balance, add the addition, see the big plus sign. So what's the subtotal here? Mia says $1,198. I actually put the number like twice. You don't have to. $1,198.55. And then we subtract that from the deductions.
And so what is our reconciled balance?
946 and
9. Mia says 946, 9. Anybody else get that?
940.
I'm sorry, 949. Sorry. What was it again? 946
and 9.
Is that what everybody else got? Okay, now, that's the bank side. Now we're going to do our side. Any interest? Did we get any interest? Yeah, did you see?
So the 198, we're subtracting that from the 252, right?
Yeah, 119852 minus 252.46. That's a big subtraction. Maybe I should write the word add and subtract. Is that what you get, Christina? Okay. Now, what interest did they pay us? 22 cents. And then maybe this is where we have our direct deposit or IRS refund. So our total is 22 cents. And then any bank charges, bank service charge? $5. And if you get direct deposit, they should take that away. Any others? Oh, yeah, that was so, she didn't turn out so nice. Anyway, ATM withdraw, $100, I forgot to put it, and what did those jerks charge me to take the money out? I'm sorry? $2.50, big jerks. So, okay, 22 cents here, subtotal, and what's the total for the total deductions? 107.50. So, add 22 cents to the 1,053.37. Christine, am I losing you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see the interest on the this bank statement?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Now look at the bank statement. Daniela, make sense? Okay. Tara, cool. Okay. I know Janet, Mia, and Alvaro got it. They get the little triangle right there. The bank, yeah, the bank, the bottom of the sheet. This thing right here. See, 22 cents?
Oh, that. Okay.
Oh, that. And there's the $5 surcharge.
So that's the interest.
That's the interest. It's the interest earned.
Okay.
And then service charge, ATM that we forgot to put in our check register. Okay. Yeah. So that's 10, 53, 55, 59, and then we subtract these guys, and what do we get? 946.09. Do they balance? Yes, they do. So Christina, you want to stick around? We'll go through it. But the rest of you got it right. Piece of cake. Okay. All right. What a great test. Oh, no. No, unless I was drunk when I did it. Yeah, if it's not balanced, where do you go first? The first place to go is here, the check register. That's the first place to go. Because it is. If you just make one mistake here, that's why you missed the spreadsheet. Because there's a spreadsheet now that you can do that does it for you. You just type in the transactions, it'll do it. You make one mistake here, you're going to get screwed. If you miss one of the transactions, if you put the ones with the check marks instead of the ones without the check marks, it's not going to work. So that's when people get frustrated and give up. Don't give up. Just go back. First thing, check your check this guy first. Make sure that's right. And then go through the statement, make sure you've gotten all the transactions in the right place. And you see, the thing is, once you do it a few times, it's not that hard.
I took financial algebra, but I was like a little bit ago, so I'm trying to remember
again. Yeah, you do it a few times. And then on the website are spreadsheets that do much of the stuff for you.
Yeah.
So that's when life gets easy. Now, what I recommend to people is that they... Thank you, Janet. What I recommend to people is that they keep both a spreadsheet or an app on your phone or whatever, and a written register. Because I don't trust computers, you know. I'm waiting for the I'm waiting for that internet fad to blow over, right? So, so you have a record, a written record. Well, that's typically a checking account. Most people will use a checking account for their day-to-day transactions. Some people use a savings account.
No, it doesn't mean like you don't need to be.
Oh, no, 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 no. Right. Many of these things can be just debit and credit.
So
yeah.
Spending and getting
Back
and forth.
I still use checks. I'm old. No, you go online, you can get it for a lot. You buy them through the bank, yeah, they're expensive.
Oh, you're not. It beats having, like, you do have to send a check doing a mail order, and that's they charge you for those.
Yeah, they charge you. But if you don't.
What?
Mail
order. You have to do, like, the cashier's check because you don't have a check box. It's like a one time thing, but then you go in and they pay you.
Well, some. Like, if you go to Navy Federal. They'll give them to you for free. I forget how many. Mission Federal, I think, gives us 2 per month for free. Which bank is that? Oh, yeah, no,
That's what I got.
What, Union Bank?
Yeah, will they give me any?
Ask them. Ask them how much they charge for, if they charge for money order. Sometimes they'll give you 1 or 2 a month free. But no, but normally they're going to charge $5 or more. A cashier's check is sometimes more. Well, they gotta make their boat payment there, man.
$27.
For? Why? Because we have to make our boat payments. Don't you understand? Okay. Okay, Christina, how we doing? Okay, see you on Thursday. Be awesome. I'm tired. I've been reading all day. You see?
Wait, I'm just kind of like, I got the numbers. Okay, so the subtotal is adding the 506. Right.
Adding, where is it? Adding the 534.27 plus the 664.28. Right. I should have pointed down here. I'm sorry. I should have pointed over here. But see, there's only one in each category. Where's the... There it is. I should have pointed down here. This is going to be on the exam.
But that's just
the boxes.
There
was something to get that Okay, any questions, any thoughts?
What's the percentage?
There's no percentage. That's 22 cents.
It's 22 cents. Okay, so I'm
They paid us 22 cents. Wasn't that nice of them?
Yes. 22 cents.
22 cents. And notice,
Chris. Plus the 1,000.
Yeah, 1,053.37. 1,053.37 plus 22 cents, 1,053.59.
Okay.
Then we subtract the 107.50, 946.09. And now, look, watch. On the website.
There's a
answer key.
Yeah.
And then there's the answer key right there. Okay? And then for number one, there's a video that you can watch.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, good.
And then
you're good.
Okay.
Okay.
And then I'm hoping.
Hoping and prayer.
Give you a lot of stuff Thursday.
Oh, good.
My makeup stuff.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it. Okay. Okay. No, actually, I have a couple of different. There's two things I want to go to at noon, and I have an office hour at 1.
Oh yeah.
And there's a Persian New Year celebration that I want to go to. And then there's the student teacher seminar where the teacher.
Wait, Persian? I'm born at Persian high school.
Persian? No, as in Iran. Persian New Year, Iranian New Year. Yeah. Cool. Forget exactly where it is. I have to go look. I have to go look on my. It's on my screen. I ran out of water. I should have used the big one. My two water bottles. I always bring two water bottles. Okay. O'clock. Cool. Taxes? No. No taxes. Chapter 4, banking, which we just did. Okay. Chapter 5, 6, and 7. Good word. Oh, sunshine. Warm. Couple of days, it'll be spring. Rebirth.